we're going to talk, Jorge and I might talk a little bit later about how we came together to talk about these kinds of questions. I want to say that I see the clock as a very, as an enemy here. So I might be cutting myself as I'll give myself a certain amount of time, and that will make a little of this paper incoherent. I've taken it out of a much longer discussion. So let me just begin and see where the time takes us. So Walter Lehmann became ill in 1916. Now this small fact, which is of no interest to anyone here, is of no little significance. First of all, because of the name Walter Lehmann is unknown, and above all, because in 1916 evokes associations of such suffering unleashed by catastrophic policies of major European imperialist states that Walter Lehmann's illness scarcely merits attention. But Lehmann, including his illness, was not without consequences in the relationship to the origin of what has come to be called critical theory. Outlandish as it may seem, I'm going to propose that Lehmann's interaction with another Walter, in this case it's Walter Benjamin, Lehmann's interactions with this other Walter stands at the origin of critical theory, as we've come to understand it. And something else. Lehmann's illness led it to a lacuna in Benjamin's work. More exactly, the lack of a synthesis that was nevertheless latent in the line of research that Benjamin was undergoing in preparation for his academic qualifying dissertation on the German Baroque drama. Now, all of this is doubtless obscure. How do I move this? Here's Lehmann. So let me begin again, where the two Walters encountered each other. It was during the fall of 1916, after Benjamin matriculated at the University of Munich for the purpose of attending the classes of Heinrich Wölfflin, whose treatise on the difference between Renaissance and Baroque established the Baroque as a major concept in European art history. Wölfflin's lectures were a disappointment to Benjamin, and so he sought out other instructors, including Lehmann, who as a Privatdozent, as somebody, assistant professor of some sort, gave lectures on pre-conquest Mesoamerican history, languages, cultures, and mythologies to a small group of students and auditors. So the major professor was boring, so he went to this guy doing Mesoamerican languages. Now, among the auditors, as it turns out, was Rainer Maria Rilke, who sat silently in the back of Lehmann's library where the lectures were taking place. And another of the active participants was a doctoral student named Felix Nögerath, whom Benjamin then learned and he called the universal genius because he seemed to know every field of scholarship. Anyway, the presence of these two people, Rilke, the genius, was doubtless an enticement to Benjamin, and above all because Lehmann's lectures were interesting, and in contrast to many of the other lectures he went to, which Benjamin described as chemically pure of thought. That was his description of the lectures at the University of Munich. And as far as it goes in Benjamin's scholarship, that's it. He was bored by Wölfflin, he went to Lehmann for sort of exotic entertainment in scholarly terms. But I don't think that's right. However fragmentary Benjamin's work may have been in 1916, so I propose here, it was catalyzed by what he encountered in Lehmann's library. This is perhaps signaled by the opening words of Benjamin's first major book, his qualifying dissertation, called The Ursprung des deutschen Trauerspiels, The Origin of the German Mourning Play. The first words are sketched in 1916. And it's a study of the Baroque that owes very little to Wölfflin, but establishes in the first word of its title, Ursprung, origin, a line of thought that would be formative in the emergence of what we call critical theory. One thing is certain about the context of Lehmann's lectures. Sometimes co-led by Nögerath in his capacity as a philosopher and a linguist, the discussions were highly interdisciplinary. But interdisciplinary is not enough to support the claim that I'm advancing here. I'm going to argue very quickly, one, that Benjamin found in Lehmann's inquiries into pre-conquest Mesoamerica a problem kindred with his own. Two, that he directly draws on the discussion in the lectures from one of the original formulations of the problem. And three, that an element of Benjamin's solution crystallized into the concept of origin can be found in Lehmann's work of this period, an element, however, of which Lehmann himself was scarcely aware. Finally, there's a fourth point, which is that Benjamin also missed something. once again due to Lehmann's illness. Now, the problem that draws the two Walters into the same story can be briefly described as that of distinguishing history from myth. In question form, where does myth stop and history begin? So myth is the term that Benjamin used constantly around 1916. He would say that for now and for a long time in my future, this will be the direction of my work. And by myth, I just want to say that Benjamin means, the word that he uses is it's der Sinn der Welt. It's the meaning of the world. Whatever is meaningful from the context of myth. So whenever you say something, it has a mythic quality. So the great question was, what runs counter to myth? What's the counter to myth? It's not science. It's not rationality. For Benjamin, it's history. Right? That's Benjamin's problem, distinguishing history from myth. Right? Understood where myth is not, the opposite of myth is not science, rationality, whatever the other opposite. Okay. How did Benjamin, trying to be very careful, Benjamin sent to Lehmann an off-print of the first text that he wrote in which one might say critical theory begins. It's called Zur Kritik der Gewalt, Towards the Critique of Violence or the Critique of Force. There's a story propagated by Derrida, among others, that Benjamin sent an off-print of this text to Carl Schmitt. It's not true, there's no evidence of it, but he absolutely did send it to Lehmann, saying, to my esteemed teacher from a very devoted student. Well, the question is, what did he learn from Lehmann? Well, if there's a single topic for which Lehmann gained a degree of renown in this period, it was an argument, I'm going to go a little bit first. It was an argument he adopted from his teacher Eduard Zeller, in favor of the historicity of the so-called Toltec Empire as the foundational culture upon which all later indigenous Mesoamerican civilization rests. Following Zela, but perhaps with less caution, Lehmann was convinced that there once was a Toltec Empire. However, it distorted its history may have become an Aztec mythology. It's very much part of Aztec mythology that there is a Toltec Empire before them. The primary task of mythological inquiry lies, therefore, in disentangling history from myth. That's Lehmann's problem, finding the history of Mesoamerica beyond the myth, primarily the Aztec myths. Regardless of the basis for Lehmann's investment in the historicity of the Toltec Empire, it nevertheless had a polemical edge. Myth for him is not an autonomous system, but is rather punctuated by reality, which is to say, by history. This is the problem that the two Walters share, how to distinguish myth from history. One way of redescribing the problem runs as follows. The time of myth is different from historical time. And one of Benjamin's original formulations of this problem, indeed perhaps the original formulation in the conventional sense of the word original, directly stems, so I suggest, from his encounter with Lehmann. Here is a remark that Benjamin makes in 1916. Actually, he makes it all over the place. There are all kinds of different versions of this. The problem of historical time is already posed to the peculiar form of historical chronology. And he had a related remark, which is that historical numbers are names. And to my knowledge, there's very little scholarship beyond a few remarks that I've encountered where one scholar said, gave a list of dates, 1936, 1919, 1871, 1948, and onward. Whatever the series is supposed to represent, this seems to me more obscure than Benjamin's remark. Its presupposition is clear. Benjamin is thinking of a Catholic form of historical chronology. In the early 1900s, Eduard Zeller showed that certain images recorded in certain Aztec codices, in all likelihood the very ones that were being under discussion in Lehmann's lectures, he took out a bunch of Aztec codices and was showing it to the students, that Zeller showed that the 260-day so-called sacred calendar and the 365 profane calendar were superimposed onto each other. And this, this is, in English, it's been translated, among the most famous text in Mesoamerican research, the discovery that figuring out how the Aztec calendar worked with the two different calendars, right? you'll notice the this is translated, but I use the same translation. The peculiarities of the system of chronology is this. Benjamin is just taking up the language of the peculiarity of chronology. So Benjamin directly transcribes Zähler into his notes as the description of his problem. Where does historical time start? That's the question of origin. So Benjamin's book on the German Baroque begins by turning away from Wölfflin and turning towards Zähler. All right. And I'm going to, again, for reasons of time, Lehmann himself added to this. This is a text that he produced in relationship to an attempt to get people interested in what is now called the Popol Vuh. Lehmann is the one who rediscovered the Popol Vuh, the great Mayan narrative. And he used it, because he was a student of Zähler, to identify various themes. There are many, many more in indigenous language of the 20-day month calendar in Mayan and in Aztec chronology. Okay, so what did Benjamin learn? The problem of historical time has depth, that it cannot be simply described in terms of the Jewish, Christian, Islamic calendars, all of which revolve around a very specific moment, birth of Christ, the birth of the world, the retreat into Mecca, right? So something else. There's a depth to the problem of historical chronology. All right. As for an element of the solution to this problem that Benjamin discovered as a consequence of his acquaintance with Lehmann, I want to show you Lehmann's solution. And here I'm going to be, again, doing this very quickly. Now that's more of this. This was published in 1920 in Lehmann's qualifying dissertation. This is a grid of all Central American, Mesoamerican history. Okay. Now, I'm going to be just very quick here. Now, you'll notice that it's a movement from myth, from the world of prehistory through myth to Vollgeschichte. That's that's German, just means full history. So this movement from prehistory to full history. There's a kind of natural progress towards full history. Right? There's much more to say about this, but I'm going to be quick. Notice at the very center of this text, and there's no question that Lehmann always had these, and he had them out in the Munich lectures. We need to go to the Ibero-American Institute where his papers are. So you have to go to that archive and the Benjamin archive and see how they connect. But notice right here, this is the very center, the classical style, and here it's called the Toltec Renaissance. Now, I'm not going to talk about contemporaneous scholarship. I'm not talking about the truth of this. I'm talking about what you see in you looking at this. And what you see is the term Renaissance is absolutely inappropriate. Benjamin saw the term Renaissance. I'm not saying it has to be replaced by Baroque, but why is it completely inappropriate here? Leaving aside the historicity of the Toltec Empire, it's because the Renaissance and the classical are superimposed on each other, right? But Renaissance means rebirth of the classical style. If Renaissance means anything, it's there's a classical style and it's reborn, but here they coincide exactly. So what do we have here? Well, in my minute, let me read you something. Origin, Benjamin writes in his qualifying dissertation, maybe 4 years later, Origin stands as a vortex in the stream of becoming and draws the material of emergence into its rhythm. In the naked manifest existence of the factual, the original can never be recognized. Its rhythm stands open only to a dual insight. On the one hand, it stands to be recognized as a restitution, and on the other, and precisely in this very character, as something incomplete and unclosed. That's exactly what you can see at the center of this table. Is an origin. And of course, origin here does not mean emergence. That's its critical force. Origin here is connected to the beginning of a historical time. Right? Now, I just want to continue on with this last. I lost my pace. It would be a mistake here to say that, to stop here, with Benjamin discovering an index of an origin in a table Lehmann doubtless introduced into his Munich lectures. For Benjamin can be seen to have missed something as well. This too is evident in the table, more exactly in the final phrases, European, Spanish, and Übergang is transition and colonial style. Nothing in the off-print that Lehmann received from Benjamin in 1921, that is, nothing in Benjamin zur Kritik der Gewalt, indicates that its author was responsive to the specificity of the Gewalt, that is, the violence, the force, the administrative control, all of those terms around the word Gewalt, that express itself so blithely in this last phrase, which is itself representative of a myth, namely that of historical continuity. That's what Übergang says. Notice this, from classic to Übergang, that's the myth. There's no break, it's a transition. That's Lehmann's myth. And this oversight is due in part, I suggest, to Lehmann's illness. He was mentally ill, according to Benjamin. Benjamin was quite concerned about his mental. Actually, he was much more concerned about his moral character. He told Scholem, who was going to the lectures on his recommendation, said, don't estimate his moral person too highly. It's all otherworldly. Right? And the otherworldly is that this is not seen as here. That is, the present and the past, so-called present and the past, are separated. He doesn't think the origin. Right? So in any case, in blunt terms, there was something wrong with Lehmann for Benjamin, and this something, which Benjamin called moral or spiritual, was a source of a distance that he not so much took from his person, they kept in contact, as from the initial impression that discoveries, this is what he said when he entered it, discoveries are going to be being made in this seminar. What went missing for Benjamin was with the specificity of the violence of Gewalt that corresponds to the myth with which Lehmann's table ends. The myth of historical continuity, here expressed in transition to colonial style. The point is not that a critique of this transition could be included as a supplement to the critique of violence, who would doubt that? But that a critique of this kind is latent, as a latent feature of the problem that Benjamin first developed in conjunction with his participation in Lehmann's lectures. And as a transition, myself, I am going to show you Lehmann's charts for Old Peru, which get extremely Baroque, to the point that they all revolve around, you can't see it here, but they all revolve around the Toltec incursion into Peru in his formulation. This is a kind of the constant movement, is the Toltec Empire as the dominant feature in South America. So with that transition, I'm going to move towards Andean culture.